In the Moment on SDPB is supported by the South Dakota Humanities Council, presenting the South Dakota Festival of Books, September 20th through 22nd in Brookings.
Summer means swimming and boating and outdoor festivals and music. From SDPB, today is Thursday, August 15th. This is In the Moment. Coming up this hour, we welcome Minnesota Americana act Humbird. We'll talk with Siri Unlin about Humbird's latest release ahead of an appearance in South Dakota at the Levitt Shell in Sioux Falls. David Hirschroot has some ideas for dads who grill and chill. We'll hear his musical picks later in the hour. But first, Friends of the Big Sioux River tests the quality of a watershed. We'll visit about the latest data and ask what it means for building the kind of community in which we want to live. But first, a little jazz for your summer day. Carl Gerke and Jim Spears join us with an update on live jazz coming to a radio near you. We're broadcasting live today from SDPB's Kirby Family Studio in Sioux Falls. I'm Lori Walsh. You're in the moment. News is first. You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. SDPB's Jazz Nightly is headed to Trio Jazz Club on August 23rd for a live broadcast. Carl Gerke is host of Jazz Nightly, and Jim Spears is trumpet player in JAS Quintet, one of South Dakota's premier jazz ensembles, and they are both seated here with me in SDPB's Kirby Family Studio. Carl, good morning. Welcome.
Good morning. This is unusual for me. Actually, it's afternoon now, isn't it?
It is. Jimmy Spears, welcome back. Hey. Thanks for being here.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Jim, tell us a little bit about this new place, because this is all exciting, and I feel like we've talked about it a lot, but there are probably so many people who haven't heard those conversations yet, so give us a foundation.
Oh, it's a lovely place. Trio Jazz Club on Main Avenue in downtown Sioux Falls, right across from the Washington Pavilion, and it is... And when you think of jazz club, the iconic idea of a jazz club, this is the room. It's small, intimate, the band's front and center. You feel like you're in the audience, you almost feel like you're in the band. It's so close, so tight. I think it seats about 50 people, 48 people, something like that.
Wow.
And Ricardo and Mary Beth, the owners who own Mary Bella, who own Bricks, who own our wine bar, where we've played for many years, did the best job of creating this place. It's beautiful inside, but it's also acoustically treated. They hired an acoustician, so the room sounds great from both a musician's perspective and as a listener, as an audience member.
All right. So, Carl, you're going to do some live broadcasting for Jazz Nightly from that space.
Yes, we're doing a live broadcast next Friday with the JS Quintet with a special guest, William Flynn, guitar player. And William Flynn is from Mitchell originally, now is based in Wichita. And he was our special guest we did a live broadcast from the courtyard at the Mitchell Corn Palace, and he was a part of that. And he was coming back, and we wanted to find some way to get him on the show. And it's just all kind of came together that he was going to be at this new jazz club. And so this is working out. Well, he'll be back on the show. Wonderful guitar player, wonderful composer as well, and he's working with the JS Quintet. And this is something I've long wanted to do a live broadcast from a jazz club.
Yeah.
And
wait, you've never done that in you have a long career.
No.
And this is the first time.
This is the first time we're doing, and it's.
They won't let you go to New York or Chicago
no, they
and
won't
take
let me,
over?
They okay. won't let me go to the Village Vanguard and do a live show from there. But, you know, this is just a fantastic opportunity, and this is the first time we'll try this, and if it works out and everything goes well, and hopefully it'll be an ongoing series that we'll do this a few times.
It could be a
few
thing.
Times a year.
So if you can't make it to be in that crowd, we'll bring that music to you.
Yeah. And the inspiration for this, from my perspective, is the history of radio. You go back to the 1930s and 40s into the 50s, and there were live broadcasts from all over the country, from hotel ballrooms where the big bands played, or... in the 1940s, during the bebop years, they'd have live broadcasts from Birdland and places like that. And you can hear those old records, those old recordings that were preserved. It's like, I always want to do that. I want to do that because I think of, you're in South Dakota and you tune in the radio and you hear all these broadcasts, these great jazzmen from around the country. And I thought, I want to do something like that. And so that's what we're going
to
do.
When people come to town, I always tell them what our jazz scene is like. And they always I think, are skeptical. They maybe think I'm overselling it. And then they see a performance, and then they come back and say, no, you were not overselling that. This is so, Jim, this is so much part of, you know, not only what you're bringing to us as a musician, but what you're trying to open the door for new musicians, young musicians. You have traveled the entire state doing this work. Why is it important to have a funky little jazz club in one of the state's cities?
Well, it's a catalyst. A room like Trio is a catalyst for new ideas, new collaborations, new projects. Yeah. You know, oftentimes having the space inspires musicians to say, hey, we should try this. Just like William coming back, you know. He said he was going to be back this summer. We knew Trio would be open, so we said, let's have you join JAS. We've never done this before with William Flynn. We've all worked with him in different formats before, but because of a place like Trio and because JAS is in town and William's in town now, it's just a natural place for us to come together and try this project.
It is still a mystery and magical to me because I can't imagine how it happens. And I've been sitting in the audience for a long time. I played jazz in high school, very, you know, low level, right? I wasn't a great jazz musician or anything, but I have some knowledge, and then I watch a lot. And every time still, I'm like, I don't know how they just did that. I don't know what you're doing. I don't know what's happening in your head. I don't know how you're working together at all. It is still this mystery and magic to me. But it is to you still in some ways, too. Like, do you come off the stage every night and say, I don't know how that 2 minutes happened?
Oh, yeah. That happens all the time. There is certainly preparation and skill that goes into it, no doubt. I mean, all the performers have worked very hard to be at the level they are. But because they're at that level, they're now they have the skill set and the ears and just the openness to try things and trust each other on stage, where sometimes then magic does happen. And certainly not every night. You know, there's a lot of nights where we say, hey, that was good, that was fun, it was a good performance. But you know, there's certain nights that you walk off stage and go, wow, that was special. Something just happened. I wish we would have recorded, you know.
Right.
But that's part of the experience, too, of listening to jazz. I think it's being there live and being there in the moment.
Yeah. All right. So, Carl, tell us a little bit. I want to talk about the show itself, how people can tune in, what they might hear when they do, what are you guys going to play. Map it out for me a little bit.
Well, essentially, it's 9 o'clock next Friday, 9 o'clock Central Time. And we'll be in the club for the second set of William Flynn and the JAS Quintet, so 9 to 10:30 live music. And as far as how it's planned out, you know, I just follow what the band does. The band has a set, and I might do a little introduction here and there, but really it's taking us to a jazz club and doing a broadcast and bringing that jazz club to, you know, beyond the state, anyone that wants to listen
right,
in, you know, either on the radio waves or on the internet.
Yeah, because that's a really important aspect of this too, Carl, and what you're doing is that you're bringing it beyond, you know, every side of the river here in South Dakota, because that is our mission, but then also beyond to wherever it ends up stretching.
Yeah, and just the whole live aspect, I've always said this about jazz, is that this is, as much as I love the records, as much as I love listening to the records, there is nothing like experiencing a live jazz performance, whether it's great local musicians like Jim and the JAS Quintet or, you know, the big national places, you know, the go to the New York City jazz clubs. But, you know, I've had some great experiences hearing jazz right here in Sioux Falls, very memorable performances. It's just music that has to be experienced live because for the players, you talk about the magic of being a musician, but also the magic of being a listener, to be in that where really, you know, Jim, you feed off what the audience is doing.
There's a dialogue.
Yeah.
And we're going to be, this is going to be in the great tradition of the Royal Roost and Symphony Sid, and there's some really big, iconic, historical DJs that would host live jazz in New York back in the 40s and 50s. Carl mentioned that, but it's a big history, a big part of the history of this music.
Yeah. Have you listened to a lot of those recordings, too? I don't think that I have, so this will be one of the, you know, the new experiences for me, Carl. You get to be
cool.
My guy.
Yeah. You know, people like Symphony Sid, you know, they had these real cool pattern, that kind of thing. We're not going to do that. I'm still going to be Carl, but I'll just be...
Oh, really? I thought, oh, shoot.
Well, maybe I could do some, you know,
no new character.
You know,
yeah.
dog. I'm just kidding. Like wild man, and call you cats all the time.
Yeah, cats. Yeah, that's right. We get to work with Carl a lot. We've been in the studio here quite a few times, so we have a great rapport and a friendship with Carl. So this will just be an extension of that in a new place, and it will be pretty exciting for the state to kind of go along for the ride. Any of the listeners across South Dakota to be able to be there with us.
What would your life be without jazz music?
Oh, I can't imagine it, honestly. I don't
want to think about it.
It's just been such a prevalent part of me for so long.
When did you fall in love with it for the first time?
Really in middle school. I remember hearing Doc Severinsen for the first time with the Tonight Show Band.
Yeah.
I was given a cassette tape of Doc Severinsen and the Tonight Show Band, and that was it. I was hooked. Yeah. My uncle gave me my first CD was a recording of Maynard Ferguson and his Big Bop Nouveau big band featuring Matt Wallace, who I now play with quite a bit. Ninth grade year of high school, and I about wore that CD out. I listened to it so much. So it's just been part of my life for really ever.
Carl, your first introduction to jazz that sparked something in you as a younger person?
My dad had jazz records,
so it's
just always been there. I grew up, listening to, he had Dave Brubeck records and Duke Ellington and things like that. So I just grew up with it. It was just music,
right?
And so it was just like, oh, this is what music is. And so I just kind of, and then there was another record we had called A Child's Introduction to Jazz, and narrated by Cannonball Adderley, and this was just a fascinating record that. I fell in love with the history of jazz. I played that record over and over and over again.
Cool.
So my uncle had the records, and it was Benny Goodman. And then in middle school, it was all Billie Holiday, Ella Fitzgerald, those female vocalists, which I still love.
The best.
Yeah.
That is the best of the
still
music right there.
Still hooked on that sound. All right. Well, you can hear the live broadcast in person at the Trio Jazz Club Friday, August 23rd at 9 o'clock, or tune in live to SDPB Radio at that time across the state. William Flynn and JAS Quintet will play at 6:30 and 9. The broadcast is at 9.
Correct.
And Carl Gerke, host of Jazz Nightly, Jim Spears with JAS Quintet, will leave you with a little bit of their music. Thank you. We'll see you then.
Thank you, Lori.
Historic rainfall caused massive flooding along the Big Sioux River. Some cities, including Sioux Falls and Vermilion, discharged partially treated wastewater into nearby rivers during the event. We're going to explore how this might have impacted water quality in the Big Sioux River watershed with the nonprofit Friends of the Big Sioux River. Director Travis Entenmann is with me now in the studio. Travis, welcome back. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me again.
We have some big picture numbers as well. We're looking at that event and how it impacts things. But tell us a little bit about the way you test throughout the year.
Yeah, so Friends of Big Sioux, we do basically citizen science. So we're testing 18 sites throughout May through September at different locations within the Big Sioux River watershed. And we collect these samples in conjunction with the state of South Dakota, who run the tests. And then we both can use our data for public awareness and policy making and things like that. And so we've been doing this over, I would say, about 7-8 years now. And we're at the point where we're showing really interesting trends in how water quality is improving or not improving within kind of our watershed area.
And how often do you release the numbers? How often are we checking in to that public awareness part of the piece?
Yeah, so we try to release data. It's always a week late because it has to go through the state process. And by the time we get the information, it's already, a week or two old. So we try to release numbers every week or two and then provide inputs and trends that we're seeing over the summer. So this data isn't necessarily supposed to be real-time actionable, but showing trends year over year over year or throughout the summer So we can make better decisions on how we're protecting our water.
So as I'm reading this, there's some quote unquote good news and then a reality check. And the good news is, you know, efforts make a difference.
Efforts make a difference, yeah. So, you know, the river got this way because basically a death by a thousand cuts, right? Okay. So we're having to fix all these cuts. So, you know, upstream landowners, municipalities, City of Sioux Falls, other organizations are putting on the ground practices that help water quality, but it took us 100 years to get here. You know, it's not going to change overnight. So there are practices being implemented on the ground. So buffer strip implementation is one big one where you're planting grass essentially along the river. That will take time to have impacts, but that's a positive step forward. However, when you get a large rain event like we did this summer, that goes beyond buffer strips and it hits citywide areas and large farm fields and things like that. So that will then pull in excess nutrients into the water.
Yeah. What are you measuring for?
Yeah. So we as an organization test for three things: E. coli, total suspended solids, and nitrates. Those are kind of the three main pollutants. TSS and E. coli are the two big issues in the Big Sioux River. That's why we test them. Now, the state and the city will test for more things, but those are kind of the three areas that we really want to be focusing on.
And like we talk about the forest, like we talk about our lakes, our rivers, who is the river for? It's multi-use.
It's multi-use. Well, it's for everyone. So it's held in public trust. You know, we can't live without water. As communities, we can't grow. We can't sustain ourselves as an agricultural area. We can't, again, grow and sustain. And then, you know, just the natural environment. I mean, we have a degraded environment. We're going to not have a healthy community. So everyone is impacted by water quality and water issues. And everyone has the right to use it in some form or fashion.
Yeah. 75% unswimmable.
For the most part, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Tell me a little bit about that, because I felt positive while I read the numbers, because it seems like some things are improving, but improving still means there are 75% of the places where you should be able to dip your toes in where you really should not do it. You can't.
Right. So the river and most water bodies in the state are given a designated use. So basically the state says we think you should be able to do this in this water body. And for the Big Sioux, primarily it's swimming or some kind of recreation is that designated use. And unfortunately, the river does not meet those parameters in one form or fashion. And the big issue really is E. coli. It's bacterial bacterial loads within the water. I mean, it's just not, you know, the safest place for someone to go swimming.
How did we become okay with that? Have we always been okay with that? That is, I don't remember a time growing up here where we would say you could go swimming in it. So it just seems like it's a river you don't swim in.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, I grew up here as well, and there's always been just apathy around the river. It's dirty, and that's just what it is. You know, kids still to this day, when we talk to them, call it the big sewer. Like, that's still the general mindset around the river. But it wasn't always like that when the city of Sioux Falls was first established. That was the main recreation source. You know, if you go to Del Rapids or Garrettson, there's still public beach houses where folks would go to change, to go recreate in the water bodies, so the river or like Split Rock Creek. So it was the main area of recreation. And just over a year with land use changes, population growth, way we practice agriculture, that has all had an impact. And like I said, it took us 100 years to get here. So it wasn't always like this. You know, grandparents of mine, great-grandparents, they were able to enjoy it, but
yeah. So it's not a problem, as you said, that you can fix with a strong sense of urgency, quote-unquote, overnight. But are there new things, new practices? Mm-hmm. Will we continue to improve and get better? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, so what I'm seeing is positive trends. There's hope there. So one is buffer strip implementation. We are seeing more landowners and more cities put in buffer strips. In Sioux Falls along the bike trail, there's the no-mow zone. That's essentially a buffer strip. That's doing the exact same thing. We're seeing agricultural practices change. So producers are actively putting in, you know, no-till and cover crop operations, so regenerative ag practices. They're actively working, and there's funding available to get cattle out of the water bodies. You know, cities, you know, looking at how they apply fertilizers and salt on the road during the winter, all those have a contributing factor, and they're all, technology is getting better. The one thing is, we know how to fix water quality. There's no new science or technology we really need. Essentially, it's planting a lot of grass, letting nature take care of itself a little bit, and just being more mindful of how we're using our water resources, and things will improve.
All right. We'll keep talking about it. Travis Entman is director of the Friends of the Big Sioux River Volunteers. You always need more citizen scientists?
Always need more volunteers, right. Yeah.
We'll put some information up to the data on our website as well. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Oh, Bluebell, do tell. I'm listening, and I mean well. Even monsters like their flowers. You watch them fall from their towers.
You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. Now, our next conversation is not about politics, it's about the arts. And yet, the musical group Humbird hails from Minnesota. And with all the political attention on Minnesota lately, I couldn't help but think how Midwestern music can be part of a national conversation. Siri Unlin is a Twin Cities singer-songwriter. I first got to know her in 2018. When she came to Rapid City for a song circle experience at Harriet and Oak. Well, this week she is crossing the Minnesota-South Dakota border to take the stage at the Levitt in Sioux Falls, and we stream those at sdpb.org/music. So I caught up with Humbird. She was on the road in rural Minnesota on a summer blue sky day.
As I'm growing as a artist and writer and just experiencing more life, I think that the music I make, I feel that it has more depth, and I hope that other people hear that too. And I think that's true of other people making music, getting something like a pandemic or a lot of the global unrest or like really, you know, anxiety inducing political cycles. I think you either have to be like real and honest about it, or you are just sort of part of the noise and the glamour that isn't so genuine. So it's cool to see artists leaning into the honest parts of their craft. I love that. I love being part of that.
I'm not mad, but I should be. Since true love proved unlucky, I cast the die, I stained my hand. Judgments and half-baked plans.
I want to hear more about this because, you know, Bob Dylan as a writer, Minnesota guy, the way that you are approaching songwriting and what do I do with anger? What do I do, you know, with these emotions? How do you make something sound more intense? I'm not trying to get you to have a political conversation. Don't misunderstand me. However, as you have done research with how people are expressing things through folk tales or fairy tales and some of that work that you did, you're also part of this Minnesota arts community that is offering something to the world. And I find that super interesting right now.
Totally. Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I mean, I think that in my own lived experience, I have benefited in ways I can't even really put language around from living in a place where on a neighborhood level, people are investing in the arts, and also on a state government level, they're investing in the arts. Like I went to a public arts school for high school actually, and it's like funded directly by the state government, and it's for kids all over the state who are like good at what they're doing at a young age. And I wouldn't be making music, I wouldn't be touring if it wasn't for living in a place like that said, hey, you're a 16-year-old kid who's writing songs. What if you went to this place where you're amongst your peers and you guys see how good you can get at it? So I feel like that's happening in Minnesota in a really cool way. And then there's also just a history of like civic engagement and also sort of, yeah, like the Democratic Labor Party asking questions like, how do we support our communities better? And it's not always coming from one party or another necessarily. I think there's also a strong tradition of family and working in collaboration in the Midwest in general, which is interesting that the narrative has changed so much. But I feel like all of that can be reflected in the arts culture, yeah, too, of people actually having real relationships with people who maybe disagree with them, but still being honest about what they think and turning up the guitar amps sometimes to, yeah, vent anger and frustration. But I also think that doing so is part of being an active citizen, you know, yeah, is making art, even though you're not necessarily sure what the answers are, but you're like responding to your environment. So yeah, it's kind of impossible for me to separate being a Minnesotan and being a musician because they're just so intertwined. But yeah, luckily I've gotten to travel around a lot of the Midwest, and I think that there is a shared ethos.
This new album, yeah, Right On, tell me about making it and being in that live-to-tape space with the other musicians on the project, that how that's different and how it's kind of also the same because there's a lot of, you know, familiar voices in the room.
Yeah, just wanting to capture something how it is. We've been touring real hard for some years, and we were like, we want to just capture the feeling of how it plays out in real life. And it felt like doing it all live in a room and to tape, sort of like the way our heroes did it, was a cool way to pay like homage to where we're at as a band and what we're making right now. And I think it was the perfect time to do that in our band's history, but also for where things are at right now in the world. It's so refreshing to hear people make mistakes and not try to fix it in the sense of like striving for perfection, but just appreciating what you can make as imperfect people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. How do you know as a writer and as a songwriter when something is a song, when something is a story? Are they both? And how does that show up on the new album?
Usually sometimes, or most of the time, it's almost like the story or the song kind of tells you, but there are some switches. Like on this new album that just came out, there's a song called Ghost on the Porch. And that was a short story that I wrote. And I was working on it, trying to get it right in like prose format. And it just didn't quite feel like it was clicking. And then I was like, maybe this should be a song. So I worked on kind of transferring it over. And then it became, I think that's my favorite song on the album. And it's my favorite one to play live for sure, but it was a story first. So sometimes they move around.
Yeah.
But I think if you kind of listen, you listen to the song or the story, it'll let you know where it wants to go.
When you're playing live then and somebody is pulled, you know, the audience might be pulled in by the music when then the lyrics are very serious and they might not expect, if they haven't heard the song before, because that's one of my favorite on the album, too. Talk about the audience experience. Do you get to see them realizing as they're maybe moving their bodies to the song that there's a lot happening here lyrically as well that's worth thinking about? Do you watch that happen in the audience as you've played this?
I'm trying to think. I feel like it's not a super long song. Like, I think it's 2.5 minutes or something like that. So I think when people hear it the first time live, it's often difficult to catch the nuances of the story, but it is a vibe. There's like, we wanted to make it feel like you were running because that's like what the character of the story is doing. So I hope people are picking up on it subconsciously, but I think a lot of people probably hear it live and are like, oh, that was fun. They maybe go check it out later. And then they're like, oh, there's like a whole fairy tale story going on here. But I don't know. I work so hard on the lyrics. That's probably what I spend the most time, you know, editing and crafting out as a songwriter. But I also understand that sometimes people can hear a song 3-4 times and the lyrics are not sticking. And that's okay too. Just kind of trust that people take what they need from a song.
Go, 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 said the woman from the porch. She was my mirror image, just standing in the door. I asked who sends me from this place? Are you a liar or a warning or a ghost with my own face? It doesn't matter, it doesn't matter. The one who was not me cried out. Soon the storm is coming and you must not be about. What of my children? What of my garden? What
do you go back to some of your songs and hear new things yourself too at later times or different performances?
Yeah, all the time. There's special songs where you sing them in different chapters of your life. And then you're like, oh, this is so perfectly about this thing that's happening right now, even though I wrote this song like 6 years ago. It can be a little freaky, actually. I'll be like, wow, I had no idea what I was writing about. Yeah. I was writing about it.
So you're in conversation with yourself creatively.
Totally. Yeah. And I definitely subscribe to the belief that there's like some creative forces out there that we can't understand, and you're in conversation with them as well. So it's a mode of self-discovery, but it's also a collaboration with whatever is at the root of all of this that surrounds us. Not to get too spiritual on the radio, but yeah, that's how I feel about it.
Does that harken back then to, you know, how you grew up looking with, you know, with your mother and people in your life who were always looking for the underpinnings of a sacredness or, you know, the human experience or spirituality? Make that connection for us.
Yeah. Well, I think growing up in the church and having a mom and other family members who were really always telling stories and looking for the ways that things are connected, and they use the language of God to describe, you know, their experience of wonder and creation. I think as an adult now, even though I'm not sitting in a church pew, that language is so formative to be around as a kid, and it's a place of like comfort to really go to, of like, well, I'm a part of all of this, so why would it be different even if I'm not in the church anymore? It's just different language for the same sort of phenomenon of belonging and existence. Yeah.
One seed at a time I give back. What was never mine, yarrow, what of tomorrow? Teach me.
And you're okay with asking questions, with not, you know, always having the answer.
Yeah, definitely. I rarely have any answers. And luckily, the type of like Lutheran church that I grew up in was a lot about questions. So that also was part of what I was surrounded by as a kid, was, you know, seeking out where is the divine where I might not expect it? And also, what are questions I can ask so that I can have a personal relationship with these mysterious powers around me. So I've definitely internalized them and try to exude them in my own way that isn't necessarily part of a religion, but I think is important.
Yeah.
Important to do. Yeah.
As a traveling musician, as somebody who's, you know, studied as a folklorist, and as an athlete, I'm curious how those things combine in your life in ways that maybe people wouldn't expect, because we tend to separate the kid who's writing songs at the art school with the hockey player or the rugby player or the athlete. But to you, this is one person. This is you.
Mm-hmm.
Are there ways, though, that other people might be surprised those two parts of you collide and are generative?
Yes, that's an amazing question. I feel like I didn't even realize this until a few years into touring full-time as a musician, how similar it is to a sports team. When you're with your bandmates and the game lasts 3 weeks and it's essentially, let's all get home safe and be on speaking terms and make great music while living in a van together for 3 weeks. It's a pretty high stakes game, but it's also so fun to do together. And yeah, I think back on playing competitive sports growing up and just the like resolve that, you know, I personally thrived off of. I don't know that everyone does, and that's okay, but I definitely flex those same like mental muscles on the road to kind of continue to be a team player and also make it go as well as we can. Yeah. Touring is a full contact sport for anyone who's curious.
I just saw a headline this morning that said, if you counted the medals won by U.S. women, that mm-hmm. we would be the third, after U.S. and China, we would have the third highest medal count for female American athletes. Yeah.
Yeah. I've been loving watching the Olympics this year. It's so inspiring to see people that good at what they do.
Yeah.
I feel like we should have them every year. Maybe they wouldn't be as special, but it's so fun. My partner and I biked to a local pub one night and just watched weird, like, sports we hadn't really seen before with a bunch of strangers. I was like, man, I need to do this more.
And that's not so different from going to biking to a club and watching a musician you've not heard before with a bunch of strangers and then saying, wait a minute, I should do this more often. Live music.
I love that comparison. Yeah, I totally agree.
Well, welcome back. I love the new album. It is an amazing evolution in your sound, but also I think it preserves the best of what I loved about your previous work. And every time I see a new interview pop up or somebody else who has discovered you, I just pump my fist in the air and say, it's about time you found out who she is.
Oh, thank you, Lori.
It's just fantastic work.
Thank you. And it'll be special to be back in your neck of the woods playing music. Looking forward to it a lot.
The electrified Americana sounds of Humbird take the stage Friday night at the Levitt Shell. SDPB live streams all those concerts at SD.net. Music begins at 7 Central Time. More in the Moment is up next on listener-supported SDPB. One seat at a time, I give back. Was never mine. You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. For this week's edition of Fresh Tracks, David Hirschroot is taking you into a subgenre of rock music. We're not talking about punk rock, psychedelic rock, or grunge. This is a subgenre for guys who grill while proudly holding a can of beer and planning a fishing trip for the weekend. We are talking about dad rock. Here's David Hirschroot talking about his love for a variety of genres, including subgenres that are new to him. Take a listen.
I love talking about music. I saw a sign one time. It said, it's amazing the number of great people in my life that I would have never met if it wasn't for music. And I especially enjoy the so-called serious collector. Some would probably say that I am one. Nothing else, you probably know a few. So it's fun to have a discussion of music, particularly news music and the different genres. Yeah, I mean, I can still remember that when there were just four genres, country, classical, jazz, and rock. Now we have, we have punk rock, math rock, whatever that is. We have Simpson wave, we have no wave, we have gothic country, cute metal, yacht rock, and a new one I discovered called dad rock. I am told that it tends to focus on 70s and 80s classic rock, listened to by dads who grill and Dads Who Chill, talking about bands like Fleetwood Mac, Steely Dan, Pink Floyd, the Eagles, the Steve Miller Band, and, well, you get the idea. Unfortunately, when I started doing some research on this, I couldn't find a lot of mentions of current music. So I decided to do some lifting and see if I could come up with a few suggestions, and here they are. One is Dave Mason with Joe Bonamassa, a song called Dear Mr. Fantasy. This is not exactly a combination that I would have expected. You're talking about a rock and roll Hall of Famer and writer for so many classic songs like Feeling All Right, recording a song from his famous band's first album, Traffic, that he didn't write. And he's recording this with a man who's been named the top blues guitarist in the world. Wouldn't have known all these years. Damn, Mr. Fantasy. You got to play us a tune. Something to make us all happy. Somebody might wonder why I'm including a rap song here, because it might be a bit of a stretch. But dads are open-minded, right? The song Houdini is from his 12th album, The Death of Slim Shady. It's been largely, unfortunately, panned by the critics. But it also debuted at number one in 16 different countries, believe it or not. Houdini is my idea of a rap song for people who don't like rap. Because what he samples here is the 1982 Steve Miller Band classic, Abracadabra. And it's just a wonderful, wonderful, totally enjoyable song. Listen to it. Now back in the days of old me, right around the time I became a dopey, ate some coding as a way of coping, take the movie, get. All right, let's talk about the Pixies. Okay, and a song called Que Sera Sera. And no, we have not been transported to an alternate universe. The Pixies were one of the originators of the term alternative rock music. And here they're doing a song that was sung by Doris Day and recorded for the Alfred Hitchcock movie, The Man Who Knew Too Much. And of course, if you're a Simpsons fan, and I mean the television show, you'll probably remember the episode where the citizens of Springfield start singing this song because they're waiting for a comet strike. It's going to wipe out the town and kill them all. Mother, what will I be? Will I be pretty? Will I be rich? Here's what she said to me. Hey, Sarah, whatever will be, will be. I love it. Now, this song is only out as a single. You're not going to find it on any album. The Pixies have a new album coming out in October. Believe it or not, the title is The Night the Zombies Came. So, listen to Que Sera Sera. I love the song, and I love the way they do it. Unfortunately, it's not going to be on their 10th album, but listen to it anyway. Whatever will be, will be. The future's not ours to see. Que sera, sera. What will be, will be.
How about Devin Allman? There's a familiar name for music lovers.
He's got a new album out called Miami Moon, which his publicist described as the past and the future colliding under a pink Miami sky. I'm not sure what that means, but it sounds nice. Anyway, Devin is the son of Greg Allman. I didn't know this. He's been making music since the early 90s. He recorded with a lot of different bands, like the Allman Betts Band. He's done a few solo albums and has this new one out, which I really, really enjoy. People might expect that maybe he's going to go in different directions than his dad and the rest of the Allman family. But it's the same blues rock road that the family has been following for years and years and years. And I really enjoy the record. I think it's going to do very well.
So you're feeling down and out.
A group called Hermanos Gutierrez. Now, they're an Ecuadorian Swiss brothers. They are Swiss brothers who have a new album, Sonido Cosmico, which is their sixth album. And it was produced once again by Dan Auerbach of the Black Keys, and it's gotten rave reviews. It's all instrumental and has been described as music for spaghetti westerns, which I kind of like. And I take my hat off to anybody these days who can make an instrumental album that is really interesting, because they're tough albums to make because you don't have any vocals. You have to get people's attention with the songs. You have to get attention with the melody. Has to be interesting instrumentation, interesting production. I think they have accomplished it here. Now, if you're interested in checking them out, they did an NPR Tiny Desk concert last year, and I watched it. Very, very interesting, fascinating group. Now, the song that I've picked out, Tres Hermanos, comes from their 2022 album, El Bueno y El Malo. Hermanos Gutierrez, recommend them highly. Welcome to Dad Rock. It's for dads everywhere. How long it's going to be around is only a question till we move on to the next genre description. But in the meantime, good listening.
Coverage you heard today, fresh tracks, Humbird, our musician interviews can be found on our website at sdpb.org/music. That is our show for today. We hope that it served you on the next In the Moment. Summer with a Symphony brings you the South Dakota Symphony Orchestra, recorded live from the Washington Pavilion in Sioux Falls this week. Rachmaninoff's Piano Concerto No. 2 in C minor. Soloist Joyce Young brought down the house at that performance. We will talk with Maestro Delta David Geyer, and then we will hear the musicians play. It's all part of our special summertime listening experiences, which we call SDPB's Summer with the Symphony. In the Moment is produced by Ellen Kester and Ari Youngeman. Our executive producer is Kara Hetland. Our videographer is Jordan Henderson. SDPB's news director is Josh Chilson. From all of us here at SDPB, I'm Lori Walsh. We thank you for listening.